Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed, and remember, we are the Resistance. Man, it's good to have you guys back here with me. Wow, what a crazy last weekend with everything that we saw on the news. And the whole week after the last podcast, my family and I had gone on a vacation, and we were gone for the entire week. You know, why is it that you gotta take like a vacation after you get back from a vacation, right? I mean, you ever feel that way? I think that the time zone was 3 hours different. So when we got home at 3 a.m. on Saturday, I mean, we were all tired and worn out. I'm even a little bit hoarse still. I'm a little bit dehydrated, to be honest with you. But, you know, we all kind of picked up this bug. And I lost 4 pounds in 2 days over the weekend. And I'll share you the details on that. But I'm just glad that I was able to get things worked out. Pun intended. Anyhow, so Saturday evening, you know, after we got back, we got a few hours of sleep and tried to get our body clocks, you know, straightened back out, and hadn't done the grocery shopping yet. And Stacy and I got in the truck. We were headed down to towards Indianapolis to get some dinner. And I was driving, and she's looking at her phone. And all of a sudden, she just almost like yells at, "Oh my gosh, you know, former President Trump's been shot." You know, it's one of those, "Do you remember where you were when such and such happened?" And it's only been like a couple of days. Now, this is Tuesday morning. We had a power outage, and power was out for like 11 hours. So I'm kind of getting to this podcast a little bit late. But, you know, it's when you have something like that happen, you know, you have an assassination attempt, and we're both still feeling the effects. And I would imagine most people around the world that have a heart, because you understand there was lives lost in this, right? Not only was a life trying to be taken, but others were taken. And it is tragic, absolutely tragic. And our hearts go out to those family members. I can't even imagine. But we got back home that night, and we're just kind of dumbfounded. We're sitting on the couch, and I see her sitting there, and I see she just starts to almost shake, and the tears are coming, you know, down from her eyes. And it really rattled her cage. And if I was, you know, honest, it did mine too. I got pretty choked up. I can remember even sitting there watching some of these newscasters and anchors getting a little bit choked up as they were trying to describe what they just saw. And I found my body doing this little bit of a shake, trying not to cry because I was feeling it. I mean, how can you not be shaken, no matter whether you like the person or not? When you witness something like that and you see the trauma, not just, you know, obviously to the former president, to the family members who were struck, to the Secret Service members, to the people sitting there in the audience, had no clue this is going on, to the family members of the shooter, to an entire nation, entire world, watching something like this happen. And I didn't mean to kind of get started off this way before this podcast, but I'm done. I am so done with all the vitriol and all the anger. People can't even have a discussion anymore without calling each other names. And that's a big piece of why we're seeing what we're seeing now. Because the vitriol and the division has gotten so bad that when we label people with certain derogatory names, and you, especially if you have a generation that's being brought up to understand or think that's the way that you speak and talk about others, it's gonna go in and do some brain damage. And we have to get a hold of this. I don't care what your politics are. I don't care which side you're on. It can happen on both sides. But it has divided our nation. You know, for whatever reason, I don't get it. There's those people out there that just can't talk politics without jumping in on somebody's post on social media or trying to shut them down. You know, have a discussion. Talk about something. But when you have to use shame, when you have to judge a person, when you have to honestly just be plain rude, and those are usually the loudest voices in the room. You know, if that's what you're doing to try to communicate, then you probably don't have a whole lot of case underneath what you're trying to debate. Because if it's based on truth, you don't have to shout and degrade anybody else. All you really have to do is you lay out the facts. And we have come to a point in our society where those loud, rude, obnoxious, and I'm going to say in some circumstances, terroristic voices, because that's what they are, have been stirring up violence for some time, and it can happen, like I said, on both sides. And it has been stirring up so much violence that it sifted its way into a young culture whose ideologies are being formed through hate, and in some case, just blatant lies. And it doesn't matter, like I said, whatever side of the political aisle you're on, if you're preaching hate, then you are also fanning the flames of violence, and it has to stop. And when I say, like at the beginning, I said, when we are the resistance, I'm talking about standing up against the evil one. It wasn't meant to be a political statement. But you have to remember something. That's who is behind all of this. The enemy is the one who fosters all the hate. So we have to learn where to pin the tail on the donkey, right? Jesus says this about Satan. He calls him the father of lies. He even says that when he speaks, there is no truth within him. People, we have got to start thinking through what we are thinking. That's how you take every thought captive. You know, is what you're thinking creating emotions and actions that line up with the fruit of the Spirit, or are they lining up with the deeds of the flesh? That's how you can prove, you know, what is from God or what is from the enemy. Anyhow, I'll save you from my soapbox for now. But the bottom line is this. We've got to start communicating in this country, or we're not going to have a country left. And the same thing, let me kind of transition here. You know, the same thing is in a marriage. You know, when you live together, you're going to get on each other's nerves sometimes. You're not always going to see eye to eye. But that's why you have to sit down and you have to talk things out. And when the voices get, you know, too angry or loud, you got to step back. You got to take a breath. You have to try empathy. Try to see things through the other person's lens and then come back to the conversation. Keep trying. Don't ever stop. It was the president of the Teamsters Union I saw last night at the RNC, and he's not going with either political party. He stood up and he says, we have to come together and talk. He was exactly right. You know, you don't quit because things get hard. Most marriages don't fall apart because the people don't love each other. They fall apart because we don't listen well to each other. We put our own needs first, and we don't understand how each other thinks, feels, or acts. And it can cause a lot of damage, you know, in a marriage. And that's why I wanted to approach a really difficult subject today. And it's one that the church, frankly, doesn't talk much about. I don't know if they're scared, you know, either they think it's not in the Bible, wrong, or because they don't want to talk about it because they're thinking it will magically fix itself, wrong again. So here's the question that I wanted to open up for today. And it's going to make some people uncomfortable. That's okay. It's going to make some people mad. That's okay. My intent is to get you to think. So here it is. Why are men visually stimulated? Wow. Big question here. So, you know, I'm currently reading a book that was written to help women understand men, and it's called Through a Man's Eyes. And I know I've read a lot of other books before on men and women, how they think, how their brains are wired, you know, all the different neural pathways and things. But when I was first told about this book, I'm like, hey, I'm going to read a book made for women. No thanks. There you go. I mean, that was kind of like, there was a little bit of maybe a little bit of anger. And I think that will come out in this podcast, why sometimes I feel like that. But again, I had to step back and look at it and go, I can learn a lot by reading this book. In the same way, I think that women can learn a lot by reading books that were written maybe about men, like Wild at Heart was one of my favorite ones. It really helps us uncover, you know, the soul of a man. But you know, when I read that it was to help women understand the visual aspect, now that's one of the main purposes of this book, of how men see women through their lens, and that women don't understand. I thought, hey. You know, I'd like my wife to understand what does go through my mind on a daily basis, maybe, kind of, I think, as long as it's safe. And then, I thought, do I really want to do that? You know, this could be a little risky. But, you know, there's a quote one of my favorite authors and friends says, you know, imagine a place so safe that you can share the worst about yourself and actually be loved more, not less, for the telling of it. You know, even thinking about that, you know, when I say something like sharing the worst about yourself, well, when we ask the question, why are men visually stimulated? If I look at it through the lens of that being a bad thing, well, then I'm going to make it bad, right? But it's not a bad thing. God created that. But guys, and some women, we have to learn what to do with that. You know, I think, let me just kind of back up here for a second. You know, I think it's what most men would be thinking if it came to telling our wives the thoughts that they're afraid to tell her, you know, whatever pops into our heads. We would be afraid, not just on a monthly basis or a weekly basis. I think sometimes we'd be afraid to tell her that on a daily basis, sometimes even an hourly basis, you know, what can go through our mind? You know, what is it that causes a man to be visually stimulated? And this is the hard sentence, not just to his wife, but almost everywhere he turns in the world today. I was about 12 years old, and I was playing in a wooded area back in Pennsylvania, not too far from where I grew up. I had walked down there with a buddy of mine. And as we were exploring the woods, we came across this old abandoned overgrown cement building that looked like no one had been there for probably 50 years. And they probably hadn't. I mean, it was like an old oil area when they had first discovered oil, and they were doing all kinds of stuff there. And it was probably just a little bit more than a stone's throw away from the Allegheny River. It was really close. And I can't remember. I wish I could remember the name of the refinery that this area had been connected to. But we only lived about 40 miles away from where oil was discovered at Drake Well. So as my buddy and I walked into this abandoned building, we noticed that there was like some junk piled up at like one of the back corners. It was a little bit kind of dark back in there, but there was no windows left. So it was fairly light. It was the middle of the day. And I saw this stuff, and it looked like someone must have been there recently. And it was a little creepy, but it was the middle of the day, so it wasn't kind of like one of those, you know, jump scare movies. But it was almost like out of a horror movie. But, you know, being back then, we didn't have, you know, like the crime rate and murders like we do now. Maybe they happened, we just didn't hear about them as much. But anyhow, we go back to the corner, you know, we proceeded to go check things out. You know, what's that horror movie like when you have the family come in and you hear, get out? You know, the difference between some men and women are like, hey, let's go check it out. Some are like, too bad we can't stay. But there in the middle of this rubble, there was this magazine. And I don't remember what it was. It was probably like a Playboy. But at first, you know, I didn't know what I was looking at, as the outer cover had been torn off. Someone probably took it. And I thought it was just some old magazine that might have been, you know, like looked at on a lunch break when some of the workers years ago used to frequent the room. But when I open up the first few pages, my life would be changed in a moment. And there on the page in full display was a woman who wasn't wearing a top, not even a bra. She was topless. And I had never seen a woman's naked breast before. And to be honest, I was, you know, a 12-year-old kid or whatever. I was in total awe. And I didn't feel shame at first. I was only honestly drawn to the image on a page. There was something within me that was drawn to that. She was beautiful. To this day, I can still remember her name. She was a famous actress from years ago, and her name was Ava Gardner. I think that's how you say it. But the two of us, we just stared at the image for the longest time. You know, there was just like this sense of awe. And it did something inside of us that we'd never experienced before. And it was almost as if our brains like suddenly went numb to everything else around us, still to this day. And for a few moments, we totally forgot, you know, where we were. We had seen a naked woman, and that image would be seared into our thoughts, you know, just like they brand a cow. And I can still remember it to this day. I mean, I can remember the moment. I can remember what her face looked like. I can remember just the smells of the room, everything that happened in that moment, because it was life-changing. It was probably about a year later. School had been out for the summer. And I can remember my dad. He took me to a part of the house where my mother and sister couldn't hear us. And he gave us the talk, right? He gave me the talk. You know what I'm talking about, the talk. And he took out a pencil and paper, and of course, there was no computers, nothing like that. It would have been weird anyhow if that would have been the case. But he drew a picture of the male and female anatomy, the differences, and tried to explain things to me. He was teaching me at home, wasn't allowing the school to do it. He took me aside to teach me this stuff. And he was explaining to me what happens to a man's body when he gets excited at the sight of seeing a woman's naked body. But there's a reason, he said, why God made it that way. And he wasn't trying to make it dirty. He was trying to help me understand the way that God made something. And as a young man, I was already discovering my body changing, and I was experiencing feelings I'd never had before. And I'm sure that conversation, it wasn't real easy for my dad to have with me. And I can't even imagine what it must be like for like single moms or dads out there trying to explain, you know, to the opposite sex or whatever, when it's uncomfortable as enough as it is. But he explained everything he could think about that I might have questions for. But knowing that I was probably too embarrassed at that age to ask my own dad questions, he showed me a book that he had gotten to help me as I was growing into a man. And he said, son, this book will answer any question, you know, that you might have. And he hid it in his sock drawer. I think it was just because I don't know that he was really hiding. I think he was trying to keep it confidential so I wouldn't be embarrassed. But he told me that anytime I had questions that I could go and I could get it and I could ask questions, you know, as long as I put the book back when I was done. You know, growing up within the church, sexuality wasn't something that was discussed much. Masturbation wasn't something that was discussed much. You know, you thought you were going to burn in hell. There was all these different shaming things. And so whenever you have an environment of shame like that, where there's not openness, where there's not communication, it's like I always say, when someone tries so hard not to, let's just pick something, go eat a snack, and they keep withholding it from themselves for so long, what ends up happening is they're going to go and they're going to splurge, they're going to binge. That's why we have to talk about stuff like this. We have to be able to get the questions out, the curiosities out, and sometimes the answers. I mean, this why is a man visually stimulated question is something that's not easy to talk about. But we have to talk about it for both the men and the women, because both are feeling some things around this that are going to cause some problems if we don't address it through the right lens. Well, I discovered something else about the same time as Dad told me this, you know, and I was discovering that magazine and my body was changing and I was, you know, just feeling different things. And Mom and Dad had this small, skinny closet that was next to their bedroom. I can remember the grain of the wood, everything on this. I can remember the smells when you'd open it up. There was an old projector that my dad, you know, had in there with a little film back then. But above that projector, on the next shelf up, there was a stack of magazines. They were catalogs for Sears and Roebuck and JCPenney's. And if you're old enough, you'll know exactly what I was talking about. And if there's any of the young guys out there, you know where I'm headed. There was almost anything you could want in those catalogs. You know, there was shoes, gardening tools, clothing, sporting goods, jewelry. But I soon discovered that right next to the jewelry section, drum roll, you guys are laughing right now, there were the women's bras and underwear. And suddenly all the other items in that catalog became unimportant to a young boy, right? I was curious. I was excited. But I was also starting to feel shame for the first time. Why would I feel shame for something that was so beautiful? I was thinking about this. I had a friend who would come over and we'd hang out all the time. And I can remember somehow he would always make his way to that closet, and I'd show him where those catalogs were, and then he would disappear with one of those catalogs for a while. Life was changing at a rapid pace. But again, curiosity. You have to talk about stuff. How do we put this stuff in the right context so that we can understand rather than having to use shame and control to try to get someone to? Because anytime you try to get someone to, you've gone down the wrong path. If a young man doesn't have someone healthy to talk to and to help steer the ship, it's like having like a 1,000 horsepower motorboat stuck on full throttle and no way to steer it. It's going to go the wrong direction and it's going to crash if you don't get it under control. Every boy has experienced those emotions, and frankly, the boy needs a guide to help him understand what's happening. You know, what's happening under the hood, so to speak. You know, you got to help him make good choices with this new, exciting, and awesome part of life, these feelings and things that God created. I was, get a drink of water here. I was sitting with my former producer from years ago, Steve Milliken. And I think we were recording my brother-to-brother CD back in the mid-90s. And we were at this restaurant up in Michigan having breakfast. And as we ordered our food, there was this very attractive woman. She took our order. And after she waited on us a couple different times, you know, Steve suddenly, he looks at me and he goes, you know, I've noticed something about you. He said, you aren't staring at their waitress anymore like, you know, a lot of the other men out here are. You know, he says, like, what's up with that? You know, honestly, there were two reasons. One was because my dad had always taught me to respect women and that they weren't just to look at, right? Especially sexually. And I knew that was true, but I also knew that always being able to do that was a struggle. And it was a difficult one, but it truly is a choice, guys, that we can make, and women too. You know, there's the biggest percentage of those who are visually stimulated are men, but there are a certain percentage of the women, and I've got a couple different books on that. Maybe at another episode, I'll kind of pull some of those things out. But for the most part, it is mostly men that are thinking that way and looking that way. But the other reason that I could have not been looking at that, you know, woman up and down when we were sitting there, was from about the age of 6 until I was 12, I took piano lessons from a widower who lived with a group of younger women who were attending college, and she was housing them. She was probably in her late 50s at the time. And the piano was up against the wall with a large mirror, and it was directly in front of the piano where I could see the reflection of everything that was behind me. And it wasn't just once, but on a number of occasions, I can remember seeing this woman stripped down to her bra. She would smoke a cigarette with one of those long-handled little things, whatever they were. And then she would come and sit down beside me to give me lessons in her bra. I'm not making this stuff up. As a young man, I didn't understand what was going on, but there was a shame, and I was feeling, and it made me so ashamed that I didn't want to tell anyone. Well, there you go. When you have to hide something, you got to be able to talk about it. There's something up. So at the time, anyhow, I didn't understand what was happening. And another friend of mine had the same experience with this same female piano teacher. And we would tell our parents later that year or so, I think it was after we were done with her as being our piano teacher. And at first they didn't believe us. But then our parents got to talking with each other, and they said, he said that happened to him too? We thought maybe our son was exaggerating. No, we weren't exaggerating. And this was about the same time when my buddy and I found that Playboy magazine, and we both quit taking piano lessons from this woman. That was probably the more honest reason as to why I wasn't staring at the waitress at our table. It's because of shame. You know, as men, we know when we see a beautiful woman. You can't not notice. You don't have to feel shame for that. You can't not notice. It's not your fault that you do notice. And what you're noticing is actually a reflection of the glory of God. God made beauty. What an incredible imagination he's got. But what the enemy wants to do is he wants to twist that beauty in your head. And what we do with that visual makes all the difference in the world. I was speaking for a men's retreat in the mountains of Idaho. And if some of my buddies out there in Idaho, man, I miss you guys. I hope to get to see you again here in a few years. But we were talking about how men are visually stimulated. It was a group of about 45 guys. We were up in the mountains camping out. And how it can make us feel like a slime ball for being wired that way. And the more a person feels dirty, the more they begin to believe it, and the more they go into hiding. And that's exactly what you don't want, because that's where you're going to end up acting out even more. It becomes like a wash, rinse, and repeat cycle. My father understood that, and now I can see that's why he didn't try to make it dirty to me. He explained that God made us that way, and that trying to hide the fact would not only cause us more issues, but it would also cause us to say that how God created a man was sinful. And that is not the truth. So in this book I was telling you about that I'm currently reading, the writer, you know, it's a husband and wife actually, but it's mostly written by the woman, takes you on a journey of a grown man and the visual minefield that this guy has to navigate through every single day. Multiple times every day, sometimes multiple times every hour, sometimes minute to minute. And now let me say something. This is all men that she's talking about, okay? This is men who are her noble men, right? Honorable men, godly men, men who love their wives desperately. You know, noticing that beauty isn't a betrayal of your wife. It's acknowledging God's amazing creation, and there is a difference. But like I said, what you do with it, where you go with it, makes all the difference in the world. So we know men are visually stimulated, period. You know, when a man sees an attractive woman, something inside him instantaneously kicks in before he can grab the thought. It's that neural pathway, and he is moved by her beauty. He's not just moved by her beauty. He wants that beauty, all of her. And it has nothing to do with who the woman is. It's not about her. It's like walking into a smorgasbord when you haven't eaten. It's a natural God-given longing, right? When you're hungry and you see a smorgasbord, you want to eat. And it's a need God put within a man. It has a purpose. And I'll talk about that in just a second. But before you go trying to defend yourself because you're afraid of what your wife or other men would think of you if they knew that fact that I just stated, you need to understand that it's something that you didn't create, but you can and you must learn how to control it, which you don't do in hiding. That's why porn is so addictive, because there's this shame factor, and then you go and you hide to try to make yourself feel better and only end up making yourself feeling worse and worse, and you get caught in that cycle. But this whole thing that God put there, it was since the very beginning of time to create an attraction, right? We were created to want to procreate. It's the same thing within the animal world. So to populate the earth, God says, you know, something is good, and he made it good, and he made it attractive. But the majority of women aren't wired this way, but like I said, there are a small percentage of women who are. But for the majority of women, statistically, they don't immediately see a man and think, you know, I wonder what he's like in the sack. Women don't get that immediate surge like a man does. Women are much more based around feelings. You know, is he a good listener? Would he be a good provider? Would he help with the kids? You know, will he communicate with me? Will he love me deeply? Is he going to be sensitive when I'm hurting and hold me? Is he being willing to give me reassurance when I need it, to put me first and not his own needs? You know, will he give me those words of love and tenderness and tell me I'm beautiful? Make no mistake about it. She can tell if a man is attractive immediately as well, but it is more about how he pays attention to her and her needs than it is about jumping in the sack. Some women know that about women, and they'll try some men know that about women, and they'll try to manipulate those women to go jump in the sack by just trying to be extra caring and sensitive, you know, play whatever card they think is necessary just to win the beauty. Yeah, they do. And those men, frankly, are called slime balls. So they say that men are more like a microwave when it comes to the physical part of the relationship. And women are more like a crock pot. You know, men can want to jump in the sack, you know, if the wind just slightly changes, right? But women are like a crock pot. They need to simmer for a while. You know, if a man is willing to show, you know, his wife that patience and time, and he meets her core needs and genuinely romances her and pursues her, that time with her will be the best meal he's ever tasted. God made it that way, and it really is amazing. That's the connection. You know, I've heard a lot of women say to their husbands, you know, when a young, beautiful woman walks by, don't go getting any ideas. I don't look like that anymore. Okay, well, you know, as the years go by, no one looks like they used to anymore. But the truth is, she's even more important to her husband now than she's ever been. And your wife, guys, need to understand that. You need to create a shared intimacy that goes far beyond the physical, and it really is a soul connection. It is the connection that God created, and it's meant to be celebrated and nurtured. But if both partners don't understand how each of them is wired and either jump in the sack too quickly or withhold and don't go there at all, they both end up missing out on the glory that God made in a physical relationship when two people are married. You don't wait for your partner to meet your needs first. You're both responsible for the part of the relationship each one of you needs and desires. Being willing to go first is a beautiful thing, because it really is laying down your number one need for theirs. And what typically ends up happening is it also moves them to want to do the same thing. There's no guarantee. You don't love to get something. You love because it's who you are. But when that connection happens, it's a beautiful thing. So, you know, be willing to go first. See what happens. The other thing I was going to say was, you know, my wife is more attractive to me now than she's ever been. And sometimes she'll catch me just staring at her. You know, maybe it's a side glimpse sometime, you know, or sometimes she honestly, she even has to tell me, stop looking at me, because it's making her uncomfortable. Not because she doesn't like me looking at her. I know she loves to know that I'm attracted to her, but she wants to know it's more than just in physical ways. But sometimes it can create that fear. And I think some of the women would identify with this is, I don't want you staring at me sometimes too much because I'm afraid that I'm not enough. I'm not enough for what you are, because I do understand how men think, how they are stimulated visually. But let me say something, ladies, to that. The more you know your wife, I'm saying this from the man's perspective, you want all the connection. I think when you're young, the honeymoon phase, there's all those things that are going on, but the older you get, there's a connection that is so much better when you know each other. And I'm talking both emotionally and physically. It's just a beautiful thing. Recently, my wife bought this yellow dress online, and I love her in yellow. I think one of the first pictures I ever saw of her when we met, we were kind of looking at each other's pictures, she was wearing yellow. I also love her in baby blue. I love her in pink. Okay, I'll stop right there. So on one of our first dates, she had on this yellow summer dress, and I think it was the one I'd seen in the picture, and it made my jaw just drop. And there was this, we went to a restaurant, I forget where it was, Marion, Indiana or someplace. And there was this, he was a little older man, he was probably in his mid-60s, and he couldn't stop looking at her. I finally had to get in front of him because it was so obvious, and it was creepy. Like I said, some guys can be slime balls. And I got in between us, and I, at that moment, I don't know what I said, but it was probably something like, you want a picture? It'll last longer. But yeah. I wasn't real happy with this guy. I think what I just did was I kind of got in between, kind of gave him the look, you know, the little dominance kind of a thing. And then, he quit. But I was really irritated, because I also know that men are visually stimulated. He was doing what his brain was immediately telling him to do. He just did not know what to do with it or how to control it. And like I said, there's a difference. And when Stacy got, I told you she got this new dress, and when she tried it on, I was just outside, you know, of our bathroom. The bathroom door was open, and she was standing there in the mirror with this dress on. And when I walked around the corner, my jaw dropped, and it was obvious. I mean, she was killing it. I was dying on the inside. And yes, I wanted more, but I also wanted to just take it all in and let her know how beautiful that she was. And her youngest daughter, who is now 15, was standing there, and she saw my reaction. And she heard my words praising my wife on her beauty. And honestly, it affected both of them. I saw it. My wife felt it. She felt my longing and my love for her. And her daughter was able to see, you know, what true God-given passion in a marriage looks like. Not this cheap junk you find on like reality TV shows where everybody's just going and sleeping with each other because of how they look or whatever. That's the kind of stuff that's being poured into our kids' minds. And we have to be able to get into the world and talk about this stuff. Because if not, you know, they're going to find it on reality television shows. They're going to find it in pornography, social media reels. They're going to compare themselves to everybody else out there and how they look just so they can get attention, right? But at the core, a woman wants to be seen, not just for her physical beauty. And she wants to be given words of life and commitment. It's a balance. It's going to take time to learn, but it is so worth it. I wrote a song for Stacy recently. It was called, I think it was just called Baby, I Love You was the name of it. But it starts off the first two verses. And here you go. This is kind of how, like I said, about how guys think. This was like, I got up, started writing this song because I saw her getting ready. It says, I wake up each morning and crawl out of bed. The smell of your fragrance plays games with my head. I'm watching you, baby. You're driving me crazy because I can't get enough of you. There's something about you when you're getting ready. My heart pitter-patters, my hands get unsteady. Your smile is so amazing, that face is a painting, and I can't get enough of you. And then it goes into the chorus. But you can see, I'm seeing her through that lens of this incredible beauty which draws me to her. But it's what I do with it in the way that I love her and pursue her that is going to help find that connection. You know, like I said, I could look at my wife all day long. And that's not a sin because we are married. That's the difference. My heart is 100% hers. But I'm sure it can be confusing to hear how a man is wired. But having her understand that and that she is the only woman that I want to look at not only shows her my attraction to her, but my dedication to her as well. You know, that's very attractive to a woman, guys. She wants to know that she is yours and yours only, and she needs to see it and feel it from you. I'll never forget my nephew one time saying to me when Stacy and I started dating each other, he said, pursue, pursue, pursue. You know, to ignore, you know, or deny the temptations that we're talking about that are in front of a man every single day because of the way he's wired, it's to open himself up to the perfect storm. And it's like a pressure cooker. If you don't open up that pressure release valve, that pot's gonna blow up. And it's something that we have to be honest about and we have to talk about it. It's not a man's fault that he's wired that way, but again, what he does with it makes all the difference in the world. So if there's any women listening to this podcast right now, and I have a feeling there will be, you know, you might be thinking, you know, after hearing some of this stuff, how can I ever trust, you know, my boyfriend or my husband again, you know, now that I know that he can be tempted to look at other women? Well, maybe a more honest question would be something like this. Now that I have this information, how can I be a better wife, girlfriend, or mom to head off certain challenges he's faced with that he didn't ask for instead of using shame or control or withholding from him? You know, the less desirable each partner feels in a relationship, the more each is going to withdraw and the more vulnerable each partner will become. So in a healthy relationship, you have to take off your blinders. You've got to face the realities of what both men and women need. And then you have to do your part to give all you have to the other person. And I've talked about this in other podcasts. It's love more and need less. There is nothing wrong with a woman wanting her husband to be a better listener and to give her words of life. And there's nothing wrong with a man wanting to take in his wife's beauty even without clothes. If men and women could ever move into each other's worlds and meet these needs, there'd be a lot less arguing and a lot more conversations happening in the bedroom. Lighten up, Francis. That is how a healthy marriage should be. You know, if you were just offended by what I said, you're probably struggling intimately and emotionally in your relationship, and it is time that you understand your role in moving your relationship forward in this marriage. God made it to be that way, and for each to serve the other emotionally and sexually. So stop destroying what God made and start loving each other where it's needed most. Listen to your partner and meet those needs. God created your inmost being. He created those desires. He created you male and female, and you are totally different. But what He made is amazing.
I'm not a knight in shining armor. I may not even be your dream come true. But for the rest of my life, I will love you as my wife. And I'll totally commit myself to you. This is my promise to you. I'll keep my word to the Lord to be faithful and true. And when the world starts letting go, I'll always want you to know that no matter where, I'll be there. This is my promise to you. I'll always be right by your side to hold you when the tears are in your eyes. I'll try to be a godly man in every circumstance, and I'll totally myself to you. This is my promise.
be there. My word to the Lord to be faithful and true. And when the world starts letting go, I'll always want you to know that no matter where, I'll be there. This is my promise to you. This is my promise.